This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you.
Your host, J. Paul Newman of the monthly District Attorney Show, will now take you on a journey to explore recent Rutherford County court cases, cold cases, and more.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-host today are Rutherford County District Attorney General Jennings Jones and Rutherford County Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime, and we also thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We will begin our broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
WGNS powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. Looking to go solar? MTE's Pro Solar program is committed to educating members on the process and helping them achieve their renewable energy goals. Learn more about Pro Solar and your free consultation at mte.com/prosolar.
Hi, this is Amanda at Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. We have all the items needed to spoil your pet, toys, food, treats, and more. Whether you're a new pet parent or a very experienced one, you'll find the items and help you need here at Animal City. We are proud and thankful to be celebrating our 33rd year in the Murfreesboro community. That's Animal City. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street, right here in Murfreesboro. Please check out our Facebook page.
Hi, this is Peter Demas with Demas's Restaurants. One of the places I love to eat out the most and still be able to do so and maintain a healthy weight is at Demas's. You can get those options on the menu online at www.demasrestaurants.com. You can make the decisions that you want to make before you come in. We have options ranging from grilled chicken to fish. You can get it with a side of green beans or spinach or even zucchini. Please have your family join our family for lunch or dinner at Demas's.
Every homicide, every rape, every robbery affects the entire community. People who are victims of these crimes need closure. The people who committed these crimes must be held accountable. Law enforcement needs the community's help in seeking justice. Please listen as we review an unsolved mystery in this month's Cold Case Profile.
On today's Cold Case Profile, we will be asking for your help in solving a brutal murder. The date was May the 17th, 2020, and the time was approximately 5 a.m. when the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a duplex in the 700 block of East Northfield Boulevard. Upon their arrival, the police discovered the lifeless body of 45-year-old Thomas Holland. The body is laying on the duplex driveway. Thomas Holland had been shot several times. Murfreesboro Police Detective Cody Thomas was assigned as the lead investigator on the case. As part of the investigation, an autopsy was conducted, and it was determined that Thomas Holland had been drinking prior to the shooting. Detectives also believed that there may have been an altercation that led up to Thomas Holland's death. Early in the investigation, the Murfreesboro Police Department did develop one person as a possible suspect. However, later investigators were able to exclude that person as not being responsible for the death of Thomas Holland. The Murfreesboro Police Department continues their investigation, but as of today, no one has been arrested for this brutal crime. Thomas Holland lived in Murfreesboro, and he had been a volunteer at the Greenhouse Ministries. We ask that you please join law enforcement and Thomas Holland's family in seeking justice for Thomas Holland. If you have any information regarding the murder of 45-year-old Thomas Holland, please contact the Murfreesboro Police Department. The number to call is 615-893-2717. That number again is 615 893-2717. Or you can email your information to crimetips@murfreesborotn.gov. That email address again is crimetips@murfreesborotn.gov. And if you wish to remain anonymous, you can provide your confidential information through Crime Stoppers. If your information leads to an arrest and a conviction in this case, you may be eligible to receive up to $1,000. The number to call is 615-893-7867. That number again is 615-893-7867. Please help us bring closure to those who knew and loved Thomas Holland, and help us to bring justice to whoever caused his death. This is J. Paul Newman, and this has been today's Cold Case Profile. The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS. My name is J. Paul Newman. On our Call to Conviction segment, we will profile the murder of Kimberly Allen, which occurred in Smyrna, Tennessee, in March of 2016.
From call to conviction, time now for a look back at one of the more intriguing and important cases for this community. From the crime, the investigation, to the prosecution.
Our case study today involves the brutal and senseless murder of 45-year-old Kimberly Allen. The date is March the 25th, 2016. The location, a residence on Branch Trail Road in Smyrna, Tennessee. It is the home of 45-year-old Kimberly Allen. Kimberly Allen's family has just arrived. They came to the residence because they had not heard from Kimberly Allen for several days. When they enter the home, they make a horrifying discovery. They find Kimberly Allen's body in her bed, and it is obvious that she has been dead for several days. The Smyrna Police Department respond to the scene. Over the next few days, a very clear picture begins to develop in the case. Investigators learn that for 2 to 3 weeks, a man named Eric Samuel Ellis had been staying at Kimberly Allen's home, but he is not now at the residence, and he is nowhere to be found. That changes on March the 26th, 2016. Ellis is located at the Nashville Union Mission. Detectives Marcy Gossett and Allen neighbors take Ellis to the Smyrna Police Department. There, with the assistance of Captain Todd Spearman, Eric Samuel Ellis is interviewed. After being confronted with the evidence against him, Ellis tells the detectives that on Sunday, March the 20th, he forced Kimberly Allen to drive to her bank and withdraw money from the ATM at knife point. He also says he may have accidentally stabbed Kimberly Allen in the neck. He said that later that night, Kimberly Allen complained about pain. Ellis said that he crushed up several pills and put them into a glass of water and gave the mixture to Kimberly Allen to drink. Shortly after drinking the mixture, Kimberly Allen becomes semi-conscious. Eric Ellis carries her to her bed. He then used duct tape to tape her feet and her hands. He also put a plastic bag over her head and duct taped the bag tightly around her neck. It wasn't long before Kimberly Allen died. Ellis also told the police that over the next few days, he used the money that he had forced Kimberly Allen to withdraw to cover some of his personal expenses. including taxi fares to and from Nashville, and buying beer and cigarettes. Ellis also admitted that he altered the crime scene. He tried to make it appear as if someone had broken into the residence. He also said that he even removed the duct tape and the plastic bag from Kimberly Allen's body. Another bizarre part of this story was that for a period of 3 days after Kimberly Allen was killed, he continued to sleep on the couch as Kimberly Allen lay dead in the bedroom. Following the interview, Eric Ellis is arrested and charged with the murder of Kimberly Allen. On July the 6th, 2017, the Rutherford County Grand Jury returned an indictment against 31-year-old Eric Samuel Ellis. The indictment charged Ellis with the murder of Kimberly Allen. The case was assigned to the courtroom of Judge David Bragg. Ellis was represented by the Rutherford County Public Defender, Gerald Melton. The state was represented by Assistant District Attorney J. Paul Newman. After over 8 months of pretrial proceedings and numerous plea negotiations, Eric Samuel Ellis decided that he did not want to face a Rutherford County jury. On March the 16th, 2018, Eric Samuel Ellis entered a plea of guilty to the first-degree murder of Kimberly Allen. During the plea, Eric Ellis told Judge Bragg, "I'm guilty. I did it. I can't say I didn't do it." In exchange for his guilty plea and pursuant to the plea agreement, Judge Bragg sentenced Eric Samuel Ellis to life in prison. Eric Samuel Ellis is presently serving his sentence in the Tennessee Department of Corrections. If you missed any part of this program, it will be available shortly as a podcast on the WGNS website.
There are places where people talk, and then there are places that people talk about. News Radio WGNS is both on air, online, and on the phone.
When is the best time to move to Adams Place?
We debated coming here for 3 or 4 years before we came, and I wish we had come a little earlier. Everything could be managed here, and that was a great blessing for us all. I've had a lot of support and a lot of friendships that have kept me going.
I'm Terry Deal. Call me about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111. Memorial Boulevard, across from Walmart.
Your Atlanta Braves station.
Hey, this is Ben Ingram. Thanks for listening to the home of Atlanta Braves baseball, News Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro, Smyrna.
This is Inside the Courts, a look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
Good morning, everyone. This is your District Attorney General, Jennings Jones, and today I will be your tour guide through the episode of Inside the Courts. We begin this segment by stating that none of the defendants named in upcoming trials or hearings have been convicted, and of course, they are presumed by our law to be innocent. With that as a prelude, we will now go inside the courts. On February the 15th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call of shots fired at an apartment complex on Puckett Creek Crossing. Officers discovered the body of Miss Rebecca Stockton on the floor of her apartment. Miss Stockton had been shot multiple times. Detective Julie Cox was assigned as the lead investigator. Miss Stockton's live-in boyfriend, Salim Hamilton, was missing. A manhunt for Mr. Hamilton was ordered, and he was located in Corbin, Kentucky. Mr. Hamilton was found to be in possession of the rental car of Miss Stockton in a .40-caliber semi-automatic handgun. Miss Stockton was shot and killed by a .40-caliber semi-automatic handgun. Mr. Hamilton was charged with the possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. He has been charged with first-degree murder by the Murfreesboro Police Department and has been extradited back to Tennessee from Corbin, Kentucky. A preliminary hearing was held on January 4th of this year, and the General Sessions Court bound the case over for presentation to a Rutherford County grand jury. The state will be represented by Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. The defendant is represented by Mr. Chris Fisher. On the 6th of October of 2022, officers with the Laverne Police Department were dispatched to a residence on Almondwood Place in Laverne, Tennessee, in response to a shooting that led to the death of the homeowner, Robin Taylor. Detective Tanner Noakes has been assigned as the lead investigator in this case. Ms. Taylor's sister, Candace Davis, was on scene when officers arrived. After initially claiming an unknown subject shot her sister and ran away, Ms. Davis later changed her story and claimed her sister attacked her and she shot Ms. Taylor in self-defense. Upon conclusion of Detective Noakes' investigation and in light of the evidence collected on scene, it was determined that Ms. Davis was not justified in shooting Ms. Taylor. She has been charged with second-degree murder. A preliminary hearing was held on November the 4th of 2022, and the court determined that probable cause existed to bind the case over to the grand jury. The next scheduled court date is July 18th of this year. The defendant is represented by Mr. Sean Williams with the Public Defender's Office, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. On September the 8th of 2019, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a shooting on Journey Drive. Officers discovered Marquis Turner had been shot on the sidewalk after leaving an event at the Elks Lodge. Mr. Turner died from his injuries. Detective Cody Thomas with the Murfreesboro Police Department has been assigned as the lead investigator in this case and developed Khalil Smith as a suspect. Upon the conclusion of the detective's investigation, Mr. Smith has been charged with second-degree murder and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. Khalil Smith is presently incarcerated at the Rutherford County Detention Center. A preliminary hearing was held on April the 6th of 2022, and in August, a Rutherford County grand jury indicted Mr. Smith for second-degree murder, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, and employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony. Mr. Smith's next court date is set for June 28th of this year in the Circuit Courts of Rutherford County. Mr. Smith is represented by counsel Ms. Whitney Rocky. The state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. On February the 12th of 2022, the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a parking lot on Middle Tennessee Boulevard in response to a shooting. Upon arrival, officers discovered at least five individuals had been struck by gunfire. Two individuals had been shot multiple times, including Mr. Brandon Anderson, who later died from his injuries. Detective Cody Thomas has been assigned as the lead investigator in this case. Upon the conclusion of his investigation, Detective Jacob Fountain charged Mr. Jamar Marks with first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, three counts of aggravated assault, employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, and reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon. Mr. Marks is scheduled to appear before the General Sessions Court in Rutherford County on June 30, 2022. Mr. Marks waived a preliminary hearing and voluntarily bound the matter over to a Rutherford County grand jury. The next scheduled court appearance is set for July 25th of this year. Mr. Marks is represented by counsel Mr. Michael Rexroth, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. On August the 30th of 2022, officers with the Smyrna Police Department responded to a shooting at a gas station on Sam Ridley Parkway. Mr. Nicholas Patterson had been shot during the course of an attempted robbery and later died as a result of his injuries. Surveillance video showed an armed subject enter the store, point a firearm at Mr. Patterson, fire at least one shot into the ceiling of the store, and then shoot Mr. Patterson before running out of the store. Detective Steve Hanna with the Smyrna Police Department has been assigned as lead investigator. As a result of the two other robberies, one in Brentwood and one in Nashville, Mr. Key Anthony Williams was identified as a suspect. Upon execution of a search warrant, Mr. Williams was taken into custody and found to be in possession of a firearm. Mr. Williams was interviewed by law enforcement, and at the conclusion of the interview, Mr. Williams was charged with first-degree murder, attempted aggravated robbery, and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. A preliminary hearing was held in the Smyrna General Sessions Court, and the matter was bound over to a Rutherford County grand jury. The next scheduled court date will be August 21st of this year. Mr. Williams is represented by Assistant Public Defender Ben Wetzel, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. On the 6th of April, 2022, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to an apartment complex on Old Las Casas Road. The body of Mr. Ryan Wolcott was found beaten and stabbed to death on the floor of his apartment. Detective Julie Cox has been assigned as the lead investigator in this case. Alistair Jennings, one of Mr. Wolcott's roommates, has been developed as a suspect. Detective Cox's investigation has resulted in physical evidence and witness statements that connect Mr. Jennings to the murder of Mr. Wolcott. Mr. Jennings was charged with first-degree murder. On August the 12th of 2022, a preliminary hearing was held in the General Sessions Courts of Rutherford County. Upon proof presented by the state, the court bound the matter over for presentation to a grand jury. The defendant's next scheduled court appearance is for August 15th of this year. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Ben Wetzel, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. On February the 13th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call in reference to a stabbing at a residence on Ransom Drive. Upon entry, officers discovered the body of Mr. Philip Maddox on a bedroom floor. Mr. Maddox had been stabbed multiple times. Witnesses on scene advised that Mr. Maddox's roommate, Malik Smith, admitted to stabbing Mr. Maddox. Officers located Mr. Smith, and Mr. Smith confirmed the witness's claim that he had stabbed Mr. Maddox. Detective David Miller of the Murfreesboro Police Department has been assigned as the lead investigator in this case. After a search of the residence, collection of evidence, and interviewing of all witnesses, Mr. Smith was charged with first-degree murder. On May 31st of last year, a preliminary hearing was held, and the court found probable cause to bind the matter over to a grand jury. The next scheduled court date is June 27th of this year. Mr. Smith is represented by counsel, Ms. Whitney Rocky. The state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. On January 14th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to St. Thomas Hospital on a reported domestic assault. The victim, Ms. Camelita Ojeda, has been attacked by her ex-boyfriend, Ambrose Payne. Mr. Payne lured Ms. Ojeda outside of her apartment, claiming to be there to pay her some money he owed her. When Mr. Payne did not have the money, Ms. Ojeda ended the conversation and attempted to go back into her apartment. Mr. Payne put his vehicle in drive and struck Ms. Ojeda with the front bumper and ran into her, pinning her between a chain-link fence and the front of his vehicle. Mr. Payne then backed up and drove off at a high rate of speed. Officers located Mr. Payne's vehicle, finding damage and markings on the front that were consistent with Ms. Ojeda's statement. Likewise, Ms. Ojeda had physical injuries to her body consistent with being struck and pinned down by a vehicle. Mr. Payne was later located and charged with aggravated assault. On July the 2nd of 2023, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a domestic assault in progress. Once again, and while released on bail, Mr. Payne attacked and assaulted Ms. Ojeda. Mr. Payne had choked Ms. Ojeda to the point of leaving injuries on her neck. Mr. Payne released Ms. Ojeda, and she began to run away. Mr. Payne chased her and threw her to the ground and began to punch and kick the victim. A witness heard screaming and went outside and saw Mr. Payne's attack on Ms. Ojeda. Mr. Payne was once again arrested and charged with aggravated assault and kidnapping. On April 30th of this year, Mr. Payne appeared before the Chancery Court of Rutherford County and entered a plea of guilty to 3 counts of aggravated assault against Ms. Ojeda and received an effective 8-year sentence to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. Mr. Payne was represented by counsel, Ms. Billy Zimmerman, with the Public Defender's Office, and the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Sarah Davis. On September 27th of 2020, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call regarding gunshots on Gunnarsson Avenue. Upon arrival, officers located Mr. Javarius Malone with a single gunshot wound to his chest. Law enforcement officers and EMTs worked to save Mr. Malone, but he did not survive his injuries. Detective Cody Thomas with the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned as the lead investigator. Upon interviewing witnesses, obtaining apartment complex security video footage, and using cell phone and GPS data, Gregory Lyons and Corey Lillard were identified as suspects. At the conclusion of Detective Thomas's investigation, Mr. Lyons and Mr. Lillard were charged with first-degree murder, employing a weapon during the commission of a dangerous felony, and attempting to sell a Schedule I drug. Mr. Malone was found to have owed Mr. Lyons $50 from an August transaction. On August the 29th of 2020, Mr. Lyons threatened Mr. Malone for not paying him by sending Mr. Malone an emoji of a coffin with a threatening text message. On September the 27th, Mr. Lyons learned that Mr. Malone was attempting to buy narcotics from Mr. Lillard. Mr. Lyons had gone to Mr. Lillard's house 20 minutes before Mr. Malone, and Mr. Lillard started texting regarding the sale. Mr. Lyons went with Mr. Lillard to meet with Mr. Malone and Mr. Lyons, and Mr. Lillard was armed with a .357 semi-automatic pistol. Witnesses heard yelling and then a single gunshot. Mr. Lyons and Mr. Lillard were recorded on various security camera videos riding bicycles to the location and, after the murder, recorded running away on foot. Mr. Lyons' DNA was found on the bicycle located just a few feet from Mr. Malone's body. It was later discovered that just 2 days prior to the murder, Mr. Lyons had arranged to acquire a .357 caliber pistol. On May 23rd of this year, a jury of Mr. Lyons' peers found him guilty of all charges. Mr. Lyons was sentenced by Judge Jimmy Turner to a life sentence for first-degree murder. The court set an additional sentencing hearing for September 4th of this year for the remaining convictions. Mr. Lyons is represented by counsel Mr. Will Fraley. Mr. Lillard has previously entered pleas of guilty to facilitation to first-degree murder in an attempt to sell a Schedule I drug. Mr. Lillard received a 20-year sentence to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. Mr. Lillard was represented by counsel Mr. Thomas Maynard. The state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. This will conclude today's look inside the courts.
Capstar is now a division of Old National Bank. You'll notice some changes as we complete the transition to Old National Bank. The Murphy Spread team that you know and trust at Capstar are always ready to serve you. We'll temporarily use Capstar Bank, a division of Old National Bank, until the transition's complete. As always, we're ready to serve you at Capstar Bank, a division of Old National Bank, member FDIC.
The Rick and Bubba Show, weekdays, noon till 2 on WGNS.
Rick and Bubba, Rick and Bubba.
What's the law?
Time now for an examination of the laws of Tennessee. This is not intended to be legal advice and is being presented solely for the informational benefit of our listening audience. You should always consult with an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
Good morning, listeners, and this episode of What's the Law is going to be presented to you by up-and-coming second-year law students from Belmont School of Law, Bryce Maniscalco and Mason Jernigan. Bryce, Mason, take care of it.
Good morning. My name is Bryce Maniscalco, and as we just said, I'm going into my second year at Belmont College of Law. I'm originally from outside of Atlanta. I went to Mississippi State University for undergrad. I studied public relations and minored in law. When I originally came into law school, I was looking to do something related to sports, but I had the opportunity to take my criminal law class this past semester and followed it up by getting this internship at the district attorney's office, which I've really enjoyed. I found myself taking a big interest in this area of law, and I'm looking forward to pursuing it.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mason Jernigan. I'm originally from Murray County, Tennessee. I'm also heading into my second year at Belmont College of Law. I attended undergrad here in Murfreesboro at MTSU, where I studied political science and criminal justice administration. I've long had an interest in criminal law, so it's been a great experience being back here in Murfreesboro, learning from the district attorney's office, learning from the attorneys, honing my research skills, and observing court hearings. Today, ladies and gentlemen, Bryce and I are going to hope to shed some light on the standard of proof in criminal trials, what is beyond a reasonable doubt. I'm going to give the quick disclaimer that this is just kind of a snapshot of the law. To really get fully into these issues would require several law lectures, but just to begin with, I'm going to go ahead and read you the patent jury instruction that would be provided to you by a judge if you were a jury member sitting on a trial. So, A reasonable doubt is the doubt created by an investigation of all the proof in the case and an inability, after such investigation, to let the mind rest easily as to the certainty of guilt. Absolute certainty of guilt is not demanded by the law to convict of any criminal charge, but moral certainty is required, and this certainty is required as to every element of proof necessary to constitute the offense. So before I get into that a little bit further, I'm going to go ahead and throw it back to Bryce to kind of tell you about the history and tradition of beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, that that standard can be kind of confusing and seem like a big burden to fully comprehend. And I think starting at the history of it and the origin of it and how it grew both federally and in Tennessee kind of helps get a good idea of the beginning of comprehension. The origins of it are under a little bit of disagreement. There's a fantastic article written for Yale Law School by a guy named James Whitman that goes into a lot of detail about it, but it's generally believed that the idea originated in Europe hundreds of years ago. Some historians and theologians say that it was believed to have been created to save the souls of Christian jurors from having to bear the weight of their decision as a sin. The idea was that if the jurors believed that they were convicting with a strong moral certainty, that phrase you heard in the jury instruction, then they could have a clear conscience. And this all had to do with the idea at the time being that any non-blood punishments, blood punishments being things like death and torture, non-blood punishments were an easy sentence. This ideology has shifted since. Over the centuries, moral anxiety has generally faded. Our views of punishments has changed. We no longer view non-harm punishments as mild like they did back then. We give them weight. But it is fairly agreed upon that the entire original idea of beyond a reasonable doubt was to take the potential for a guilty conscience away from the jurors so they can make a more objective decision. As for its introduction to the U.S. legal system, the Supreme Court has stated that the formula for beyond reasonable doubt occurred as late as 1798, if not earlier. In 1970, we have our hallmark case of In re Winship, where they codified the beyond a reasonable doubt standard for all criminal cases. And Mason in a little bit is going to go into a lot more detail about that. The standard itself has been under a microscope at times in the federal field. In 1990, the court held in Cage versus Louisiana that, you know, that long used phrase moral certainty created too high of a standard and it wasn't necessary, shouldn't be allowed in jury instruction. But 4 years later, in Victor versus Nebraska, the court backtracked, said that using the phrase moral certainty wasn't necessarily unconstitutional. I think one of my favorite things that we've gotten to find was in a Supreme Court case of Miles versus United States, where they said, "The evidence upon which a jury is justified in returning a verdict of guilty must be sufficient to produce a conviction of guilt to the exclusion of all reasonable doubt. Attempts to explain the term reasonable doubt do not usually result in making it any clearer to the minds of a jury." So I think that kind of illustrates how confusing of a concept this is understood to be. In Tennessee, we see the standard of beyond a reasonable doubt being used as far back as the 1830s. Tennessee frequently uses the moral certainty phrasing, has used it since the late 1890s. In State versus Nevels, which was a 2004 case, they justified that use of moral certainty being the correct standard by saying, "In other words, moral certainty is that level of certainty humanly attainable in matters relating to human affairs and observation." And I think that's a really powerful quote. It just shows the human element that's factored into a decision like this. I think it shows that there isn't some unobtainable, perfect standard as a juror in Tennessee. The standard is just to be a person and a peer and to make a just moral decision based on what you've been presented in court. I'm going to pass it back to Mason, and he's going to kind of dig into the nooks and crannies of that standard you heard earlier.
Thank you, Bryce. I'm just going to begin today by going through the patent instruction and kind of explaining some terms or phrases that may seem obvious but kind of offer some confusion. So beginning with, reasonable doubt is the doubt created by an investigation of all the proof in the case. This investigation is not you as a juror going out and trying to do your own research or anything like that. In fact, that's actually highly discouraged. This investigation itself is just the trial. So whenever it says investigation in the patent jury instruction, we are just talking about the trial. The proof that we're talking about is simply just the evidence that'll be offered by both sides, the prosecution for the state and the counsel for the defendant. This can exist of witness testimony, videos, pictures, forensics, perhaps expert testimony as well. Jurors are allowed to give as much weight or as little weight as they deem fit for this evidence, as they may believe that some videos or pictures are more relevant than others, and they may believe that some witnesses are more credible or less credible, depending on the facts and circumstances of the case. So, after such investigation, to let the mind rest easily as to the certainty of guilt. A lot of times people ask here for a percentage. Well, percentages, with beyond a reasonable doubt, are not really obtainable. The only thing I can tell you, as far as the percentage, comes from the next part, that absolute certainty of guilt is not demanded by the law to convict of any criminal charge. You do not have to be 100% certain of the guilt. This is because, going back to what my colleague Bryce said, that in human affairs, it's hard to be absolutely certain of anything, especially if you weren't there, and even sometimes when you are there, it's still hard to be absolutely certain of what happened. So then what standard do we go to? Well, in the pattern jury instruction, moral certainty is required. Now, this is a bit of an ambiguous term, but I think the best likening to it, comes from the Neville's case, in which it's likened to reasonable certainty, meaning that if you have a hesitation, a doubt, or a pause, then you've not met the standard. The standard has not been met because there is still a doubt. This standard is required as to every element of proof necessary to constitute the offense. Now, the element of proof is not necessarily the same as the evidence. The evidence is just used to establish the elements. Elements are typically in two categories, the mens rea, which is the criminal intent, and the actus reus, which is the criminal action. All of those must be established by the prosecution. Because you are presumed innocent in a criminal trial until you are found guilty, the burden is on the prosecution, who must prove every offense, or every element of the offense. This pattern jury instruction can be a bit confusing, and I think that goes back to a little bit what we talked about before with In re Winship. This is a thing of due process. Due process is just fairness within the criminal system. It's guaranteed federally through the Fifth Amendment, and to the states through the 14th Amendment. It's one of the only constitutional guarantees that is actually determined by a jury. Yes, the instruction is given by a judge, but it's ultimately the jury who decides whether the burden has been met or not. So, as lawyers, or in Bryce and I's case, aspiring lawyers, we can't tell you exactly what you should think. We can give you a guideline for what is fair, being moral certainty, but we cannot definitively say that this is the exact percentage that you must find, because ultimately you are allowed to be judged by your peers, and so it would be unfair and a break against due process to allow lawyers and judges to be the ones to determine that, as it must ultimately be determined by your peers.
We hope this has kind of been an introduction into helping clarify that point. Me and Mason are not attorneys or lawyers yet. We hope to get there one day. It's definitely a broad subject that could be delved into a lot deeper, but this is the best summary that we could give with the time allotted. We'd like to thank all of the listeners for joining us. We appreciate the opportunity to be here with General Jones and Jay Paul. And that concludes this segment of What's the Law?
The Monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio, WGNS, the first Friday of each month.
As we end our program today, we thank our producer, Scott Walker. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We leave by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For my two co-hosts, Jennings Jones and Trevor Lynch, this is Paul Newman, bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.